And that's not all. Buy today and we'll send you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's Christmas Eve 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast of Santa Claus. This is Chris Cosenza.
The best PokerCast of Santa Claus?
Yeah, he loves it. It's his favorite show.
Yeah, all right. Well, this is Scott Long, and I don't know. I got to think that Santa Claus has got better things to do than to listen to this.
Not according to Family Guy.
PokerCast. Well, that's true too. But yeah, no. But Family Guy, he's busy doing other things. So
I'm thinking that he's up in the North Pole listening to us right now.
I can see the elves out there. Hey, you know, we're falling behind in a log cabin. Shut up! I'm listening to Scott and Chris right now.
That's right, because, you know, a lot of people listen to us on their commute. This is his biggest commute of the night. He needs to have a long show like Annie Up to listen to as he's flying over New York.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, he probably needs all 5 years of our show just to make it around the world in one night.
I think it would probably be long enough. I think all those shows would probably be long enough for him to make his trip all around the world.
I hope his iPod has enough juice.
Like battery life.
Yeah. You better bring an elf along to make a new one, you know, every stop.
So how goes it, buddy?
You know, it goes great. And the only person more excited than me today, Chris, is Jeannie Cosenza.
And that is because?
When she saw the first item that we're going to talk about today, she called me up and she said, "Scott, my life is saved. Pretty soon, when I sit down and watch a movie with my husband every night of the week, we're going to have two movies to choose from." I am so excited with the variety that I'm going to have now, because they're making a sequel to Rounders 2, and I'm not going to have to watch the first one with Chris every single night of my life.
Wait, they're making a sequel to Rounders 2? They're making a sequel to Rounders. It's going to be Rounders 2.
No, I'm already jumping ahead. It's Rounders 2.5. You know they always do these things in batches.
But. Yeah, they always do the upgrade for the DVD release, 2.5, you know. They add stuff to it.
All right, so I mangled that a little bit, but yes, Miramax and the Weinstein Company this week issued a press release saying they've agreed to produce sequels to a couple of popular movies, starting with Shakespeare in Love, Bad Santa, and of course our favorite Rounders. You know, and I wonder if they could just, like, you know, save some money and everything and make it really appeal to the mass audience. If Matt Damon has sex with Gwyneth Paltrow and then robs a house.
Well, you know, I guess Damon's writing partner was in the Shakespeare in Love too. He had a pretty terrible accent, that Ben Affleck, but so he was in that movie too. So you can get, like, these guys like two for $3 or whatever. You know, it's like, I don't know. And then also the Bad Santa. Who else was in Bad Santa besides Billy Bob Thornton?
It doesn't really matter.
I guess it doesn't. I don't know.
You know, that little person.
He was an elf, right? He played an elf.
He plays the same character in everything.
Every movie.
Yeah.
Did you like Shakespeare in Love? I couldn't. I don't know if I really liked
it. You know, I hate Shakespeare in Love for a lot of reasons. One, I don't know how to read. so I never really appreciated Shakespeare. Two, wasn't really a big fan of Gwyneth Paltrow, though I got to say I'm warming up to her now with her little country music career thing taking off.
Okay.
And the biggest reason is that it totally robbed Saving Private Ryan from the Oscar that year. Saving Private Ryan, a seminal movie in our lifetimes, Shakespeare in love, great flick, but Saving Private Ryan didn't.
Yeah, you know, somehow I don't think that's a truly sincere remark by you. I have a feeling that it probably made you lose the Academy Award pool at the Times when we worked there, and that's probably why you're so bitter.
I can guarantee you it did that, too, but Well, and here's the thing, too. I would much rather, you know this, and our listeners know this, I would much rather have Gretchen Mol as my muse than Gwyneth Paltrow, too, so.
I still can't believe that you don't rather have Famke Janssen than...
Nope, sorry, we're not going to go down that road anymore, because we're talking about Rounders 2 now. Now, if they're both in Rounders 2, then we can revisit this whole silly escapade that you put me through every time we talk about Rounders on the show. But, you know, aside from the whole, wow, Rounders is coming back, you know, there's some people talking about, you know, oh boy, are they going to ruin Rounders? You know, is it one of these like Bad News Bears where they try to make it and they totally screw it all up and ruin it?
Yeah.
But the most interesting I thought that I've heard is this question about whether it's possible in 2010, 2011, whenever it is that they're going to make this, for Hollywood to make a poker movie that has, one, the mass appeal to put butts in the seats, but could also stay true to poker.
Well, they already did that. Lucky you.
You know, I totally forgot about that. Yes,
lucky you.
You are correct.
It put asses in the seats, and it made all the poker players happy.
Yeah, yeah. But I think they're trying to put more than Eric Bana's dad in the theater. I think they're actually trying to make money on this movie.
Oh, man. So you're wondering, do you think that it could be a movie that everyone would want to go see, like, but also be true to what when we go and see and believe it kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, we're on a poker show here. The people that listen to our show, I hope, play poker and enjoy poker. You know, when you do a movie, it doesn't matter whether it's poker or chess or curling or whatever, the people that are really into that are going to pick it apart. You can't get away from that. They're going to like, oh, come on. He's not going to check raise Johnny Chan. Johnny Chan's going to fold for one more bet. You know, there's going to be some semblance of that anyhow. But, you know, it's Hollywood, and if you get too technical with this stuff, it becomes a documentary. And the only people that want to watch a poker documentary are the people listening to this show.
Right.
And you can't make money on it. That's why documentaries are always get their own little cute category in the Oscars, you know. Oh, yeah, thanks, Al Gore. You saved the word. Here's your little word. Get away. So, you know, these people in Hollywood have to make it so you could take the wife or the girlfriend, the husband, the boyfriend, who says, I'm not going to go see a poker movie. And then you do the always famous thing, well, it's not a poker movie, honey. It's a movie about the triumph of life. And, of course, they get there and they walk out. Yeah, it's a freaking poker movie. Thanks. Well, my $12 back.
Yeah. Well, I think you do have to, and I think we're going to talk about this a little more, too, about what we think the show or the movie might be about or whatever. But I think you have to have star quality. You have to bring Matt Damon back for this. If you don't, I think the poker side of it, people are going to be disappointed because you want to see, you know, what's Mike McDermott? Did he actually make it while he was out there? Are they going to Vegas? You know, that kind of thing. And so I think you have to have star quality. So you have to have someone like Damon back, you know, and then, you know, all the man crush guys will show up to watch him. And of course, all the women who think he's cute will show up. So you got to get the people to go because of him.
You stitch one photo of Matt Damon on your photo, and Chris will not let you forget it.
You know, after that, you know, maybe they keep the poker simplistic, but put enough of it to make it realistic. You know what I mean? So it's not, you know, not like you were saying, you don't want to get too technical with the.
Okay, so no, not as many actual hands of poker
right
being played out on the screen, but a poker story that weaves it together, so you don't get the nitpickers out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think
I can see that.
When you listen to or watch Rounders and you listen to the dialogue, there weren't very many poker hands played in that movie.
Right.
Just the first part of the movie and the last part of the movie. And he even explains it with the overdubbed dialogue or whatever, however you say it. And, you know, saying, here's the beauty of this hand. You know, I just flopped the nut straight, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, right there, he's telling you this is the best hand possible. And it really, there are only a few things in Rounders that were kind of made your eyebrows go, huh? You know, but other than that, I think they really steered away from that. So I think if they follow the same sort of recipe, that they should be all right. I'm just really curious as to what they're going to do for the story. Will they go to Vegas and then his life will, you know, he's out there working the Treasure Island show, you know, at night to make money to, you know, what is he doing out there? Did he become successful? Did he lose a lot of money to the online? You know, who knows? So, I mean, it might be interesting, but if they can't get Damon to come back, I mean, who cares, really?
Well, yeah, I think you made a good point. I mean, I don't know how many of the characters need to come back for this to be real, but I think at the very least it's got to be Damon and Worm, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you can't do a sequel without Worm, I don't think.
I don't know.
No, I really don't. He was such a pivotal point of that movie. And, you know, he cut him loose at the end, and he went to the World Series. So, obviously, we want to know how Mike McDermott did, but we also want to know what, you know, did Worm – I mean, all right, maybe you don't need to bring him back, but you have to pay reference to him at some point.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got to come into the story somewhere.
They might say something like, oh, my God, where's your shadow or something? And if they don't bring him back, he's like, who, Worm? Yeah, he's back in, you know – whatever prison that was, or you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I mean, they might make reference to it, but you know, yeah, he got beat up by, you know, whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if they need, and of course that's the other thing too, is now these guys are such big stars that they'd have to commit so much money to it to get them back. You know what I mean? It's,
Yeah, but sequels make a crap load of money, so.
Yeah, but you can't make the movie without Damon. You can make it without Worm, but you can't make it without, okay, if you don't make it without Damon.
And I think we can both agree that you can't make this movie without Gretchen Mol, too, right?
You can agree. I'll say Famke Janssen needs to, however you say her name, she needs to be back, but whatever.
All right, well, here's the thing. We want to do a fun little contest here on Annie Up. And by contest, I'm not in any way implying there's prizes involved here.
Right.
Because we haven't had time to figure that out, but... but I think it might be interesting a couple weeks from now to revisit this topic. And, you know, when we have some time to think about what we think our best storylines might be and share them. And I would like to hear from the Annie Up Nation on what storylines they think would be.
Yeah, yeah. Try to, well, sort of like come up with a synopsis of what you think the movie's going to be or what you want it to be, right?
Yeah, so send us a treatment. You know, have your agent, you know, fax it over. We'll take a look at it, you know.
Make sure it's bound by Kinko's. We don't accept anything less.
But no, you know, email your ideas to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if we get enough of them that we think we could do an interesting show, and you know, Chris is going to have a crazy idea, and I'm going to have a very sound, bankable idea, and we'll put all those together in a show coming up.
That'd be pretty cool. You know, we're always telling our listeners to do stuff for us. You know what I mean? Like, just that was for an instance there. But also, we've always said, hey, if you guys go to a poker room for the first time or if you're visiting poker rooms, you know, tell us how it went for you. Report back to us. And Jeremy Ronzio did just that, right?
Yeah, he I believe he's in the military, and he stopped off during California, went to a little local casino, he said. And the reason we bring it up here is not so much to detail his trip report. So the actual casino here is unimportant in my mind.
Right.
But he has some things that he ran into, Chris, that were a little odd to him, and I imagine they're probably a little odd to some of our listeners. So we're going to kind of talk about them because odd as they are, it makes sense when you look at it from the casino side.
Yeah.
I'm taking a leap there because some people are going to probably say I'm crazy, but I'm used to that. All right. And here's the thing. You generally like the room, but here are a couple things that that threw him off. They do a morning tournament every morning, Chris. But they start their registration with players seated in live games. So Jeremy said he was in line when the actual registration opened for people not in line games, and he was the second alternate.
Oh my God!
On the waiting list. So they filled up the entire tournament with people in live games. You know, a guy walked around with a little clipboard and took the money and stuff. He thought that was odd. And then, but he made it into the tournament. And when he sat down, he found out he only got 500 units, Chris.
Man.
But blinds started at like something like 5 and 10, so it wasn't as bad as it could be. But they did double every 15 minutes, And he said very quickly this tournament turned into a shootout where you're just throwing your chips in the middle and hoping for the best. So, and then the cash games, there's something else too. But let's talk about the tournaments a little bit too. Because I think what Jeremy missed here, and probably some of our listeners might miss, is kind of like the economics of small poker rooms, I like to call it.
Yeah. I think it's very transparent what they're doing here. I mean, they're catering to the locals, but they're also trying to get them in and not keep them there playing a tournament for too long. So it's pretty transparent why they're doing this. It's the morning tournament. Get them to show up early so they can play in a tournament, but also start some cash games, get the rate going. And when they get them to the tournament, only give them 500 units so that they're not there all day and then go back to the thing and make more rakes. So it's pretty obvious why they're doing this, right?
Yeah, and I think it's a simple thing on the outside, but I don't think a lot of players actually pay attention. I mean, so what I'm going to tell people is when you go to the poker room, you know, look around, watch the cash games for a while. You'll notice that most rooms, you know, the rake is somewhere like, you know, $4 or $5. And watch how many hands an hour are dealt. You know, good rooms can get out, you know, more than 30, 35 hands an hour.
Right.
At $5, that's, what, $150, $175?
Yeah,
did I do the math right?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
All right, and then you do a tournament, and let's say, you know, they take a $15 rake on it, and you're there for 4 hours.
Yep.
Over a couple tables. You could quickly see the economics there. Cash games are where rooms make their money. Tournaments, for the most part, are there to get people to play cash games in most rooms, particularly this one.
Right.
Or, you know, kind of a, you know, a, you know, an amenity that, that raises the status of the room. There we go. I knew I'd find it somewhere.
Yeah, well, they're offering a variety there, but it's
well,
it's
yeah.
Still
I mean, can you imagine Borgata, or a room like that with no tournaments? It's not the Borgata anymore. So,
right. But
they also have the room for it. So tournaments really, and I love this when people complain about tournament structures. Oh, these things they blow. Blah 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 blah. Well, you know, there's not really an incentive for a room to offer a really good tournament structure at the expense of the cash game. So, I mean, this particular thing, you're right. They by doing player-seated live games, they get people not only to come in early in the morning, but they get them to sit down and start playing poker.
Yep.
So they're generating all that rake. And then by giving them 500 units and crazy blinds, they ensure that the people aren't going to be in tournaments very long.
Right.
Break those tables down and get those people right back into cash games. So.
Makes sense. I mean, that's what... especially small rooms. That's what they need to do to survive, and in California, no less. You know, you need to do stuff like that to survive. It is weird that the registration began with the people who were seated, and, I mean, since it was like his first trip there and probably his only trip there, considering his career and stuff, you know, it's tough for him to have known that. Maybe it's obviously a locals joint, so everyone who goes there essentially knows that. Going there, but maybe there should be some signs posted too.
Might have, and I think he said he probably missed that actually. But I mean, you see these type of tournaments at a lot of places, particularly in Vegas. I mean, one of the trips that Fast and I took out there, we hit like 6 of these.
Yeah,
and got nothing to show for it. Other than I got my money with pocket jacks, and some guy called me a 4-3, and but that's the way we are. And you know, the other thing too, he didn't mention the rake in here, but I'm pretty sure the rake was probably pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, for the tournament or for the...
Yeah, for the tournament.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, but then he did eventually play cash games, and he said one of the most popular games there, Chris, was a 2-3 no limit that had not one, not two, but 3 blinds. 2, 2, and 3. So the player under the gun... Ah, see? You almost caught me. Player on the button had a post a blind as well, too. And Jeremy said he thought that obviously it spurred action. But he came away with it thinking that it's a way for the room to ensure that it gets its max rake every hand. What do you think?
I think they did that at Palm Beach too, don't they? With the button has to put the
they do on. Actually, yes, that's correct.
Yeah,
and they did
that
at the Luxor. Remember we played the Luxor?
Yes, the Luxor too. And I don't remember if the Luxor was the button though. I don't know if it was just like small blind, big blind, big blind, or if it was button, small blind, big blind. But yeah. The Luxor. Yep, I remember that. So it makes sense. It's a lot more money in the middle, and I guess, does that really ensure they get the rake? If everybody folds, they still get to take rake out of a $7 pot?
Well, yeah, I mean, in that case, they don't. But I guess what he's trying to say is anything that spurs action probably also spurs
big enough
pots.
Yeah,
and, you know, if I'm, let's say, what's a raise going to be in this game when you already got
$7
in the pot, right? You're probably not going to do your 9 You're probably going to do more on that, right?
Yeah, especially, well, normally, in other words, to cash games, you know, it's not like online or tournaments. You're probably making it 10 to go anyway with a normal 2-blind structure, maybe 12. So with another, what seems to be limper in there, you're going to make it 14 or 15. So, yeah, absolutely. Somebody raises to 15, somebody calls, you've already got 30-something in the pot there, and yeah, your rake is already $3.5-$4. So,
Yeah, no,
absolutely. And that's smart for the poker rooms, but I hate to pay 3 blinds every time around, you know? It's like every other hand, practically, you're in a blind.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on the type of player you are. I mean, I don't like to play no limit at all, and I like to play pretty tight, so I hated that Luxor game that you sucked me into, mostly because you sat down in the nice hot seat that, you know, got quad aces, like 7 hands in a row. But yeah, I'm not going to play this type of game. But, I mean, people that like action, or, you know, if you find, and sometimes in locals casinos like this, it may not be as crazy as you would think it is. It might be a lot of limpers.
Yeah.
And then you got a lot of money, and if you're a limper, then, you know, if you can see the flop, a lot of flops for $3 in a game where you already got 7 in there, then, you know, I might play that.
Yeah, your connectors are going to go way up in value if people are limping. You've already got 3 guys in there who essentially almost given you pot odds already just to call with any 2 cards. So, yeah, it's definitely something to think about, maybe for our crews. We're going to start a 2-2-3 game now.
Yeah, and we're going to change all our tournaments to 500 units. Get them in and get them out.
Main event, $350 buy-in, 500 units, 3-minute blinds. I'll get back to those cash games.
Of course, we're kidding. And you know what? The other thing I wish I could kid about, Chris?
Yeah.
Is the fact that I think I believe we've had 2 straight interlopers win Apes events.
You know, that's good news to me because we save money, right?
Well, there is a yin to every yang. And, yeah, that's $2.12 of postage to send a banana out that we're saving. So we could almost split a Happy Meal.
I get the toy.
all right, well, we had our Heads Up event on Saturday, and Green Pakiji defeated Dima 971968 Heads Up. Presumably for the banana. You know, I only recognized one name in the last final four, our good friend Rice, F88, pulling for him. He couldn't bring it home. But, you know, we probably can admit that this was a weird event, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I liked that it stuck to what it was supposed to do. There was 33 players entered, so everyone got a bye but one couple. And then, you know, that stuck with that. And then after that, everybody was in the second round, and you only had to win 2 matches other than those 2 players to make money. So that was kind of good. But, yeah, it was kind of weird.
Yeah, and I didn't realize this, and it proves just how stupid I am. But I logged in. I'm like, all right, I got our first round bye. And then I'm trying to catch and see where everybody else is. And I'm like, wow, a lot of people got byes. And there's only 1 match going on. And then I call you. I'm like, Chris, guess what? And you're like, yeah, Scott, they're talking about the 64-65 March Madness tip-in game. Where have you been? And I'm like, oh, okay, sorry.
I went up against our good friend Nick. And early on, I lost a couple of hands. And then I actually rallied and was taking a lead. I had, you know, made some maneuvers and stuff. But then it got a little bit later, and he had pocket aces, and I had pocket fours, and I really didn't think he had pocket aces. I thought he had, like, ace-king, and I was willing to get it in. And then when the flop came, sure, I was thinking he missed, and I was thinking he missed, so I got the – I already committed so much. I was like, you know what? If he has ace-king or ace-10 or, you know, king-10 or something like that here, he's probably not good. So I got it all in, and you know, I don't know if he slow-rolled me or if he thought I might have had a set. But it seemed like he soul rolled me when he showed me the aces. And I was like, fine, I'm out. Yeah, I know I'm out. First round or whatever. So, actually, second round. So I didn't finish in absolute last place because I was out in the second round. So that was all right. But, yeah, I was disappointed. I really wanted to win a couple of matches and see how far I could take it, and should not have gone so far with those fours as I did.
Yeah, I was disappointed, too. I really enjoyed playing Heads Up, and I was looking forward to this, and particularly with the only 33 players. I knew it wasn't going to draw out into my holiday party.
Right.
At night.
Right.
And, of course, I drew an interloper, I believe. And we had a very good match, I thought. It drove a lot of people crazy. I do have the badge of honor of always being the last heads-up match going in every heads-up tournament I've ever played in my life. Because I played differently than some people. I mean, it was funny to me watching some of these matches that were over in two hands.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you start with 1,500 chips, you're going to get it all in the second hand?
Well, you know, the circumstances, you never know.
I don't think so.
If I got Ace-King and somebody shoves on me, I might call.
I mean, some of the nasty vitrolic crap that was coming out of some people that were rail-burning us was just ridiculous. And I think those are the people that are like, hey, I've got Queen 7, that's a computer hand, shove!
It's a computer call.
I mean, they're calling me nits. I mean, I can take all that. I am a nit, but I have a very deliberate way of playing heads up, and it usually drives people crazy, and I'm quite certain it drove my opponent crazy. He just got the best of me at some point.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, everybody's style is different. You have to adjust, and that's probably what the guy did. He just figured out, all right, here's what he's doing. He's being deliberate or whatever, and I'm just going to adjust. But, you know, our match was pretty much every hand was a raise. And we were pretty aggressive with each other, and I just ultimately didn't think he had a pair when he did, and it was too late for me. So, you know, I enjoy heads up, too. I think it's pure poker. And when I like to play online, when I like to lose a lot of money, that's what I do. I play heads up. When I want to go through my bankroll, I like to play 50-cent dollar or $1, $2 heads up and either double up or you know, re-up with the sign-up bonus or whatever, you know. So that's what happens. But I like heads up. It's pure poker.
All right, well, our next event is our last CNLHE, crappy little No Limit Hold'em, event of the year. We only have two events left. After that's the eight-game mix. So this is the last chance for you No Limit Hold'em players to get in and play an unadulterated game. That will be on Wednesday, January 12th at 9 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, you got a chance to win one of those 10 seats in our free roll on Wednesday, January 5th, Eastern. Always on Poker Stars. More information at anyupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S. And, Chris, our winner didn't call, obviously, because it doesn't have Skype, and the call from Russia would be very expensive for him. But, you know, Paul from South Carolina called, hoping that he has cracked the free roll code with an idea. So we're going to give him his time in the sun here, and then I'll crush his dreams.
You know, on your free rolls, some of the other podcasts, they've been actually charged one frequent player point, and that's cut down the number of interlopers quite a bit. But you may want to carry it to an extreme where you charge like 100 FPP points, and if you get knocked out in any position, you win your 100 FPP points back, plus whatever prizes are associated with the top winners. And that way, you know, these interlopers do not have very many FPP points because they're just looking for free games. So anyway, that's my suggestion.
Crush away, buddy. Crush away.
All right. You know, it's kind of intriguing, and I might even admit it might be the most intriguing idea yet. Still just not going to work, I don't think.
No.
I mean, one frequent player point. I mean, I know free roll cockroaches probably aren't going to do that, but there's going to be enough of them that do. It's just not going to change much at all.
I could have sworn somebody suggested that too before, where you had to have at least one frequent player point or something. I remember hearing something similar to that, but yeah, no, I don't think it's good enough. And I think enough of these people who are trolling for the free rolls are doing it because they've had success at it before and they have money. So they probably would earn a point anyway at some point. You know what I mean? I don't think it's enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really haven't gotten into the math on how do you get frequent player points, but I just checked the other day. I've got like 1,298, and I barely play anything more than apes. Yeah. So $5 tournament. So of course, you know, it's been a long time, but I don't know. We'll continue to think, but at this point, the free rolls just seem to be a broken product. But we'll see what Star says, and we'll let folks know.
Well, sticking with the feedback theme here, Kurt contacts us. He wanted to know what was the name of the computer game that I was playing and with Big Dave out in Vegas when I was out there for the World Series. And then he wants to know if we recommend any others. You know, it's simply called World Series of Poker. It's made by Mask Publishing. And they did the game with TJ, right, that we reviewed years ago or at the Times, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is when I first got this email in, You know, I didn't want to bug our Big Dave, who calls himself our West Coast Chubby Reporter, right?
Yeah, that's what he says.
Love it. I didn't necessarily want to bug him right there. And I'm like, you know, hey, I'll just go on Amazon. I can find it, right?
Right.
And I really didn't think it was called World Series of Poker because there's no way that Harrah's or Caesars or whatever it's called now would ever license that name to it. And the graphics were so old and clunky that... But, you know, so I couldn't find it, right? And then I emailed Dave, and then he got in touch with us, and I'm like, wow, World Series of Poker. So I went and checked, and it is. And then I realized this game was made in, like, what, 1985?
Yeah, this is before 95, this is before it was important to keep all those,
you know. This is back when the Binion family hadn't ran the company into the ground yet.
Right.
So they probably made a nice little chunk of change off of it beforehand. So very interesting.
Yeah, and he actually, it's funny that this got brought up this week because Big Dave actually, like, emailed me a photo of him taking a shot. He took, like, a camera phone picture of him winning the World Series of Poker.
Awesome!
in that game, you know. So that is pretty funny. He's got all the money stacked on the table or whatever, and the guy's like, congratulations, you have won the World Series of Poker, you know, or something, so... Yeah, the graphics were pretty funny, but I liked the game. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, obviously the RCG in it was pretty terrible and probably rivals that Omaha game I was talking about last week. But so he asks if we suggest any other video games, right? Video poker games, what
right,
he's saying.
Right.
Well, I've played a few.
I have not, so I'll let you take it here.
I think one of them was called the World Championship of Poker or something like that. It was like Howard Lederer was on the front. It was for like the PlayStation and.
Oh yeah, okay.
And I actually tried to sell it to like one of those Movie Stop or the Game Stops, right, those places, and nobody would buy it. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a reflection of the game or maybe they had too many in stock or. But I think I got it for free, like at the Times or something.
Yes, so you were trying to.
I was trying to pawn off a, you know.
You were trying to profit off of it.
Yeah, and it didn't work out. But that one was pretty interesting because I think it was like World Championship Poker or something. But that one has like Lederer and Steve Zolotow and has all these like big names in it, and they essentially like give you pretty decent. Like hints on how to play things and strategies and things like that. Like in between, like say it's a blind, the blinds are going up or something, and the game will reload. As it's loading, that little graphic will come up and say, hey, when you're playing small pairs, think about limping and trying to hit a set and take, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was kind of interesting, and the graphics were pretty wild. I mean, you could like create your own character and, you know, that. The places you played poker was interesting, and then you could start your own career and move around the world to play the circuit and stuff. It was kind of cool. It was kind of fun. But, of course, you know, the RCG, again, it gets back to – I can remember playing it a few times. You know, we always played it around Christmas time when the family visited from up north, and they wanted to play poker online, you know, as for fun, but they didn't really take it seriously. So we'd throw it in the game. But they would actually literally give you the exact same hands, like from – game to game, and you knew what the flop was going to be, and you know what I mean, that kind of stuff would repeat, so he would know, okay, I'm going to bet the farm on this hand because I know I'm making a ace high flush, or so that kind of sucked, but that was one of the games that I had played, you know, and that was like for Sony PlayStation, and I think it was for Xbox and stuff.
They probably did a computer version too. But.
Yeah, they probably did, yeah, like you said, a PC version, so I liked TJ's game, but it wasn't really a game, right? It was more of a training thing, yeah,
kind of thing. You certainly didn't have the features that this World Series of Poker that kickstarted this whole thing had.
Right.
That really, I mean, we talked about this before when you're playing. I really enjoyed playing that. You could do a lot of customization on it. You know, I used to have this Poker Academy on my computer too that I kind of enjoyed too. It was kind of a mix between maybe the World Series of Poker game and what you're talking the TJ game. So. It was really kind of a training thing, but you could do some actual playing on it. You didn't have the great corny graphics where you're flying off to Vegas and stuff. But
was that that wasn't one of the games that you and I got for free when we went and covered the Academy that time?
I'm pretty sure it was. I don't buy games.
Yeah, because I remember I think I loaded that too for a little while and played it. And you could actually, I think, if you had it hooked up to the internet, you could actually play with other people around the world.
Okay.
Who had that same program loaded and were, you know, also went to the camp. So you could talk to them and exchange stories about the camp and stuff. I think I had that loaded on my old computer before I, you know, we started the business and stuff. So, yeah, I played that game too. That was pretty good. It was like the WPT game or, no, World Series of Poker Academy game or something is what that was called, I think. But, yeah, there aren't a lot of, there aren't a lot of video games that, well, one, you know, ever since, you know, you could play for free on PokerStars and things like that,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you're going to get actual experience there. So I stopped playing the video games. One of the reasons I played the video games is because a lot of the games that you could buy had different variations that you can't even get online.
That's true.
I don't know, Kansas City, Global, I don't know, whatever it was, you know, like.
Right.
So those Pineapple and things like that. So those were the games that I, you know, I used to like to practice those games in the computer just to get strategy down before we'd play them in the home game or something. So, you know, just do a nice little look on Google. You might find some other games. But as for recommending them, I think those games are okay, but just you can never really get a true random, you know, logarithm like you could with an online room. So
yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing too is there's so many of these titles out and probably a lot of them on the used bin.
Yeah.
Somewhere used on, you can probably get them for a buck on eBay or something like that. You might as well just buy up a couple of them and,
yeah,
you know, find out which one works best for your personality. I mean, it's tough to recommend because you don't know what people are looking for in these type of games, but right, they're so cheap now, you know.
Yeah, and like you said, GameStop, those places where they sell video games, you could probably get one there for like $2.99 or something. Not much of an investment, and then, you know, a cost of investment, and then just figure that game out if you like it. But like I said, I like that other game that was like World Championship of Poker or something. That was pretty cool. But again, the random card generator just drove me crazy, and I had to stop playing. But you could play all kinds of games. Like they had different kinds. They had like shoe tournaments,
awesome,
and draw tournaments and things like that. And you traveled the world, and you built your pad up. The more money you won, the more like you could buy a hot tub and stuff like that. It was kind of funny. So you play the career mode. So it was kind of cool.
All right, well, we got a little housekeeping again. Just to remind folks, the Book the Cruise at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. We're down to January 7th is the cutoff for the March 7th cruise to lock in that great rate of $649 a person. After that, it will be at prevailing rates. And then also a reminder, folks, about our Antiup Ambassador program. Fill out the application at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors, plural.
Yep.
We're looking for some good folks up in the Northeast, and I know we got listeners out there that can help us out. So
yeah, absolutely. All right, Scott, let's see what happened on the poker news desk. Antiup News Desk. Did I bold that?
Poker News Desk.
It's Poker News. It's just Antiup Poker News.
It's just global now. I feel a lot more pressure now. All right, ESPN 2 and ESPN 3 will offer same-day unedited broadcasting of the final table, the main event of the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. It starts at 5 p.m. Eastern on January 15th on ESPN 3, which will be a one-hour delay of the actual action, and the Deuce will join in at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Well, that's pretty cool. It's about time they started to pay attention to, like, the PokerStars stuff, too, and not just the World Series, you know?
Right, yeah.
I know they had done the USPC for a while there, and that was okay, but it always seemed like a sort of a letdown. You know, I know they've done PokerStars stuff. They're doing it right now, literally as you speak, from last year. So that's kind of cool, you know, and I think they'll get enough people to watch because the PCA is a pretty big deal now.
Well, I think they'll get enough people to watch on ESPN3, which is like the computer, correct?
Yeah.
The Deuce, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, there might be some curiosity, but I think what people are going to find, including people like us that really like poker, is, you know, watching unedited poker.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's really like watching flies play golf.
Is that possible?
It is. Yeah, they have to use tiny little clubs. But you know, we've kind of got, you know, even folks like us that really love the game, I think we've gotten spoiled with just how cool the editing of poker is,
yeah,
and how quickly it flows. I mean, I know there's times you're sitting there watching, oh man, I wish I could watch that entire hand play out exactly like it did. And you're probably right once, but
yeah,
you know, 6 or 7 straight hours of just, you know, raise and fold, raise and take it, or, you know, waiting 12 minutes to make a decision, you know, it can get a little old. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I absolutely give them credit for trying it, because, you know, I know there's a class of people out there that really do want to watch and find that hand for hand really exciting.
Well, one of the things too you might be forgetting is the DVR TiVo type thing, where people search for the term poker and it'll tell them when things are coming on. So as long as they put it into the system early enough, I think people would just love to watch poker. Will just watch it anyway, not realizing that it's probably unedited. You know, they'll just be searching for poker and it says, oh, ESPN2 has the PCA tonight, let's watch it, or next week, and they'll record it, you know, which counts as watching it if they're one of the Nielsens or whatever. So, you know, I think they'll get enough interest from people just trolling through the, you know, surfing through the sites or the channels, or, you know, just actually wanting to watch it anyway. But like I said, I'm happy that they're actually giving it some sort of cred here and doing that live thing that they do, like they do at the World Series. So
absolutely.
Despite a ban on poker issued 18 months ago, Russia is still struggling to shut down hundreds of illegal poker dens in the country. Bloomberg News reports new special units have been formed that will be on call 24 hours a day to raid games as they hear about them. And apparently they're not stopping them online because they're still raiding our game.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm gonna give a little call to Medvedev or whatever the president's name was over there. I'm gonna be like, you know, hey, can we get a special anti-up unit team? And, you know, when we have Apes events, I can just flash a little bat sign or whatever, and you guys will go in there and take these guys out.
I tell you, if you're banning poker in Russia, why are you letting them play online and take all of our money? I don't get it.
Yeah. You know what might be funny though is in an upcoming like free roll, you know, people will be playing. All of a sudden, there'll be like this panic Russian type in the chat box, and you put in a little, translator program, maybe like, don't shoot, don't shoot.
All of a sudden, like, half the field is sitting out. You're like, what? Yeah, what? Must have gotten raided.
Oh, we can only hope. All right, well, finally, Andy Upper David Bloomberg, who runs a great website called Reality News Online, emailed us to say that we might have been duped by the clever editing from the Amazing Race producers, and that there's considerable uncertainty whether Tiffany Michelle and Maria Ho will actually be on the next season.
Oh, no.
But don't worry, Chris. It looks like another poker star will make it on a reality show next year, at least if you can believe Twitter. Phil Hellmuth this week tweeted that he's in the running to be on the next Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, my God. Oh, can you just see it now? Him and, like, one of the, you know, Anna Slutskaya, whatever that dancer name is, has partnered up, and he's like, oh, my God, you're an idiot. What makes you think I could throw you in the air and catch you? I have no upper body strength. You're an idiot. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. If that happens, I will watch every second of that stupid show.
It's going to be very, very tough, I think, for Phil to win this with the Navarro perch. He's not going to be able to spin his partner around when he's covering his mouth up.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. I want to see him dancing with sunglasses on, too. That'd be hilarious.
You know, I think he might be cool, though, if he does the little, gets upset and kicks a chair. And it flips up in the air and lands on four legs and the partner falls into it. That would be pretty sweet.
And, of course, one of his dance moves will be the wedgie picker that he always does when he stands up. He always fixes his socks and then picks his wedgie. I hope they can work that into the choreography somehow.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Man.
Oh, man. Well, I really hope that happens. I really hope that happens.
Well, I guarantee you that would be far more entertaining than watching Tiffany and Maria, quit around the world a second time. So
quit around the world. Oh, man. All right. Well, our hotline is 813-448-1120. Give it a call. Leave a message. We use it. We give you something cool. This week's call comes from John in Austin, Texas.
Great town. Great town.
Yeah, and he says, are these guys really playing this many tables?
I've got a question about hot box on PokerStars. I'm starting to pop down on the 50-cent $1 tables on a regular basis and finding 2, 5, 8 players that are playing 24 tables. We've got a guy this morning playing 26 tables. 18 tables, 12. Surely it's not humanly possible for more than a couple, but every table I'm going in, it's like that. I get a padded letter from Poker Stars that says, we check it. What are y'all's thoughts on that, and what do you think that might mean? It's like, is everybody really playing 24 tables at these levels? See what you think.
All right, well, we could break this out a couple of different ways. But first, I'm going to say, surprisingly as it may be, John, there really are freaks out there that can play 18 to 24 tables, humans.
Yep.
And do it all the time. You don't think they created five-hour energy for normal people, right? That was all for these poker freaks that got nothing to do but lock themselves in their little room and with their big, 102-inch TVs with 97 tables on there. So it's possible. And I think what people kind of forget, too, is these people aren't playing each of these tables optimally like you would if you were just playing one table, I guess,
right.
Is what I mean.
Right.
I mean, you're doing a lot of set mining or, things like that. So if you got a good hand, you fold. If not, boom, you're out.
Yeah.
So, it is possible to play more than you probably would think you can. You're not going to see me playing 18 hands.
Well, the other thing, too, there is actual video proof of Javad Khan playing it's like 47 or 49 sitting goes at once because they had shut down his account thinking he was a bot.
Right.
And he had to send Poker Stars like a video of him doing it to prove that he actually did it. And when you're doing those things, whether it's tournaments or cash games, right, you're playing quality hands because you're going to make enough money. If you have 40 tables open, you're going to make enough money playing the quality hands to make up for all the times you're folding and all the other tables.
Absolutely.
And like you said, if you got like five or six monitors coming up with like 10 games on each, it's not that hard to – not saying it's that hard because I couldn't do it. But, for some of these people, all they really have to worry about is how long it takes them to get from one monitor to the other because those 10 games are sort of spread out in a way that allows them to have to play like three or four hands at once. So I think that it's definitely doable, and no, it's – I mean, there could be bots doing it, but they would probably catch on to that pretty quickly, just like they caught on to onto him before he showed them the video to prove it. So,
yeah, I mean, I give PokerStars credit and a couple of the other big rooms for being very good on ferreting out bots. I mean, you can't get rid of them completely. It's almost impossible, too, I think. and, John Miner ran into actual bots here, too. But I know that it's a big concern for these PokerStars, and they are doing what they can to ferret it out. But, a lot of it's like these free rolls, There's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
When people are determined to beat the system and you're on a big, huge site, there's only so much you can do. So, but I would think I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt here that he was actually playing against some real crazy people hopped up on energy drinks.
Yeah, and, it even happens stuff like not the multiple tables, but the stuff that, cheating or angle shooting, whatever happens live, and how do you know that if you're playing a cash game live that the guy on the left is marking, he's putting his card protector in the upper left hand corner of his two hole cards, and you don't know that because he's doing that he's telling the guy next to him he has ace king because of where he put that. There's all kinds of ways to cheat and all kinds of ways to do things, so it's difficult to monitor live, never mind online, so things like that happen no matter where you are.
That's true.
But I do believe it's true. These people do run 18 to 24 tables at once. It's pretty remarkable. I can never do it. Scott, how do you think you would do if they actually said, all right, here's a free account. Here's $500.
Right.
Try to do 24 tables at once for the next 8 hours. How do you think you would do?
Well, when I did dabble in multi-tabling, I did have the strategy of only playing pairs.
Uh-huh.
If I had a pair, then I played, and then I tried to hit a set, or aces, I might push too, but I was just set mining and I could do it pretty well for, I think I did at most six at a time.
Okay.
But 18 to 24, I don't know. I think you'd have to go into it with a specific strategy like that. Cause when the tables are beeping and bumping, and of course I was doing it on my laptop screen.
Yeah.
Rather than plug it into, a big flat screen like you have now too. As long as you have a good strategy, a very narrow strategy, then I think you could probably survive. But I'll be admitted, I absolutely would not enjoy it.
Yeah,
it's just too much stress for me. I play
no
poker because I enjoy it.
Yep. There's no way you can go in and have like be pondering, a long time on one hand because should I play this suited connector? There's just no way you can afford that time wise. So you have to have that strategy, and I like your pair strategy. That's anything over eights or something, then I'd play it or something. So, I think that's interesting. I think the one time I tried it a few times, and what I ended up always doing was I would have like four tables open, three of them would be knit tables. I wouldn't make any money. And then one table I have a big hand, win a bunch of money, and then close the other knit ones, and then go back to one table, you know, because I found that one really hot loose table or soft table or whatever. So that's what I always ended up doing. So I can never have the discipline to stay with four or five of them open. That's how it worked out for me. All right, so what's he win?
John from Austin, we are going to send you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single or mixed games from element26.net. That's element deuce six numeral .net. I'm sure that that quality program can break down 18 to 24 tables at a time for you. Certainly better than we could.
Man, good luck with that.
All right, well, our mailbag this week comes from quote-unquote Gus from Washington, Chris. And, you know, this is what these lawmakers in Washington State have done to our listeners. They're scared to use their real names on our show.
Yes, that's just so sad.
And he's not even playing online poker. He's just worried because he's playing poker that the Washington State Gestapo is going to come down and haul him away.
My God, it's just so sad.
So we're using a fake name for him. Gus, wink, wink. This is what he had to say, Chris. He has a question about the home game. He plays in it regularly. It's a $10 buy-in, no-limit hold'em tournament, so a little friendly tournament. He says a big night would be $75 for first place. A group of friends who are not concerned about the money, but are more concerned about having some laughs, down a few beers with friends. People don't play soft against each other, though, but no one's there to crush each other's souls either. So, sorry, Chris, you're not invited.
Oh, damn.
He said, over the past year or so, though, a couple friends of friends have been showing up simply to crush the game. They berate players for bad play and don't hesitate to let others know how much better they are compared to the rest of the table. So you were invited, Chris.
Yes, I will keep taking this from you, even though I have worked very hard to be very social and level-headed at our games and no longer do stuff like this. But go ahead, have your fun. I'll just sit here and let you keep on reading.
All right. Well, Gus says he plays in casinos for both cash games and tournaments, used to donks like this, and is also used to taking their money. Way to go, Gus.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, though, he says their behavior in this game makes it so some of the regulars who are there just to have fun and relax no longer want to show up if these vultures show up. He says it's changed the complexion of the game for the worse. He said he and a couple others have attempted to let these guys know that it's a friendly game. That ain't working. So he wants to know, Chris, now, is it fair for us to expect these other players to play by our unspoken set of rules? And if we ask them not to come back, would it create any awkward situations for us socially or professionally? He goes on to say that he loves the podcast and he thinks that we are the official snub for the podcast awards this year.
Yeah. He means the bluff ones, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it hurts when we're a rival magazine. We don't get much love.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
What are you going to do?
We're over that.
Well, let's get back to his question. I think that it very much is your game, very much has gotten out of hand, and you have every right to determine who comes to your home game and that they play according to your rules. That's why it's your home. It's your game. You know, just like when I was at Frank's house and he threw that chip to me and I obliged and said, okay, I'll show the hand if I have to, kind of stuff. Same thing here. You know, it's their home. If you don't like these people in your house, who says you have to have them in your house? I mean, don't invite them. And if these are people you work with and you have to go see them at work, hey, you got to explain to them, look, we're there to have fun and be friends, and you're there telling my friend that he's a donk. I don't like that in my house, and I won't stand for it. I would never expect him to just invite people. Whose feelings would you rather hurt? The people who are outsider friends or the people who are your actual friends who started this thing in the first place? So I have no problem, right? I have no problem telling these guys, hey, hit the road if you're not going to conform to, you know, at least the friendliness of this game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one problem that I have, and I agree with you mostly, is that it's tough to tell people. I mean, we're not talking about rules here.
Right.
All right. I mean, they're not, as far as I can tell from this email, that no one's cheating or playing against the rules. They're just not, as he said, as he calls it, the unspoken set of rules that, hey, you know, we all know we're just here to have fun. So I don't know how you can go to someone and say, hey, you're not making it fun. can you make it more fun? And then have them really kind of understand. I mean, some people might, I guess, but I mean, it's different if they're breaking rules. Then it's easy.
Yeah, no, I still think, you know, it's I don't know. It just, to me, it seems like if you don't want to have this person in your game, you have every right to say, look, you know, or you know, even if you have to, just say, hey, look, it's, we're trying to keep it a smaller tournament, or, you know, we're going to put you on the outside list, and if somebody doesn't show up, we'll invite you.
The outside. All right, but here's the thing. I mean, he specifically mentioned awkward situations for many of us, both socially and professionally.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not so much worried about the socially, unless he's, you know, trying to get in the pants of, you know, sister of one of these donks. But professionally, I mean, what if one of these guys is the boss?
Yeah, well,
I mean, how can you go to your boss and say, you know, I love the fact that you played our game, but you're a real jerk. Can you not come? And by the way, I need Friday off.
It's got to be a way around it somehow. Right? Yeah, you just tell them you're not having the game anymore, and then tell everybody to keep their mouth shut, you know?
so lie to your boss, yeah.
Yeah, say, hey, you know, we're just not going to have the game anymore. It's just, it's too hard to get all of us together, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, all right, that's cool. And then go back to your friend and say, hey, okay, let's have the game tomorrow night, and don't tell
them. A secret handshake and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Passing notes in class. Right? Well, you know, I told Gus, too. I mean, here, the bigger problem here is, and you can't go back and unring the bell, I don't think, but... You know, we're very careful in our Antioch home game about inviting newbies in.
Right.
You know, we're nice people. We like to invite people in. And, you know, we have podcast listeners that show up every once in a while and want to come in. And, you know, we'll give them a flyer there, too. But as far as regulars ringing them in, you know, we kind of have a kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say we're snobby, but, you know, we know the type of players we want in our game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not so much as somebody just asks, hey, can I come to your game? Oh, sure. You know, it's, you know, let's think about it. You know, let's get to know the person and find out whether we think they're going to be a good fit for a game. That doesn't mean that they're a fish or something like that. But we know exactly what he's saying here, too. I mean, our group is very much like this. They're probably a little bit more concerned with the money than this group.
Right.
But we know what we expect in our game, and we don't want to bring anybody into the game, introduce anybody to the game that we don't think is going to be willing to play like that, right?
Right, absolutely. And I think that it seems like they were forced to have these people in their game. Like, somebody brought somebody with them that they didn't know about, and really, what are you going to do, say, oh, sorry, you can't play? You know, so then the guy gets in, he plays a couple of times with you, and all of a sudden he's a regular, and then he starts acting the way you don't want him
to
act.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, is they didn't nip the problem in the bud.
Yeah.
I mean, in most cases, you know somebody doesn't fit in on the first time there.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that's happened in our game, too, and then, you know, at the end of the game, we're getting together, and, yeah, you know, Cassenza, he just doesn't really fit in this game.
let's not invite him.
How about we just not invite him anymore? I mean, I'm serious. That's the best way to do it. But if you're like, let's give him a second chance, and then next thing you know, you wake up 6 months later, and the guy's messing up the game.
Yeah.
And he's your boss, and you're trying to date his daughter. And so now you can't get him out of the game. So
you just can't get that dating the sister-daughter thing out of your head, can you?
I never had one of those exciting, awkward love triangles.
Oh, man. Like,
so I'm trying to live vicariously through...
See, you got
to
watch Shallow Hal with your favorite Gwyneth Paltrow, and then you'll be cured of it.
Did not like that movie. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, as I told Gosh, it doesn't change the situation it's in now, but, you know, we're trying to help everybody out there, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
For those of you getting games started, I mean, this is something to keep in mind. You know, knowing what kind of players you want in the game, and you know, nipping those problems before they become problems is my ultimate advice. Gus is just screwed, but
I would follow our suggestions for Gus as far as, you know, just, you know, obviously he's taking the time to go to these people and say, look, you know, I want to be friendly, and they don't care, and they're still doing what they want. So, you know, maybe you just start a separate email blast for the people you want in the game and say, look, we're having a game, but, you know, we want to get it back to the way it used to be, and we want to control who's in the game. So let's just have our friends here and no one else.
All right. Well, Gus, I don't know if it will help you in your game or not, but we are going to send you a hilariously funny T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells great shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerwear.com. Imagine we can ask Robin to maybe make a shirt that says, "You are not welcome, sir."
And let's hope Gus has the, let's say, the brass ones to wear it in Washington. All right.
Yeah, that might be even better. Yes, I am a Class C felon. I played online poker.
That's a great shirt. Last week, right along with Colombo, we got our player to fold by shoving. So we're still at the 5,000, 10,000, 1,000 level, and now we have 330,000 in chips. We're dealt ace of hearts, queen of hearts in early position and raised to 30,000 units. It folds around to the small blind, who calls. And then on a flop of 5 of hearts, 10 of diamonds, 4 of clubs, the small blind checks. Should we c-bet or do something else?
Okay, my antenna always goes up when the small blind calls a preflop raise. Because this person's always going to be in the worst position for the entire hand. And against a player who's shown aggression. If lots of people are in the hand, then I think that person usually has the odds to take a flyer on a hand and hope to flop big. But here, the small blind at best can hope for it to be three-handed if he's looking for pot odds. So I'm inclined to think he has something better than a flyer. A check is standard from him here. This board isn't draw scary. So now the tough question becomes, if we make the standard continuation bet, since we showed aggression and the flop isn't terrible for our hand, and then risk being raised, possibly by error by this guy, or check behind to control the pot but not get any information and risk giving our opponent a card that could help him, I'm going to check here and react to what my opponent does on the turn and what that turn card is. But at the same time, I'm not going to argue with anybody that's going to bet out maybe like 40K or something.
Good. Don't argue with me because I'm betting out. Maybe if I was on the button, I might consider...
On the what?
The button. I might consider a check.
The button?
The button.
Button?
The baton. The reason why that I would bet here is I had ace-queen in early position and raised.
Right.
I'm telling this guy that I'm not stealing his blind. So I'm telling him I have a big hand here. I've taken the lead in a hand. I don't want to give up the lead to a small blind who very well could have totally missed this flop with a baby pair or with, you know, king, queen. And I need to take my aggression and continue with it just to see what happens. If I bet, say, 40 grand and he calls me, that only took 70 grand out of my pot, stack altogether. I still have 260,000. I still have 26 big blinds. So if somehow he calls me and then leads out on the turn or raises me and I can get away from it, but I really feel like a bet is needed here because we were in early position and showed strength. You know, I know it's pretty standard, but I don't know anything, according to this ride-along, I don't know anything about the small blind being tricky, so I have to play it pretty standardly. So that's what I'm doing.
All right, well, you mentioned if he gets called, then we'll reassess. I'm not worried about getting called by betting. I'm worried about getting raised. So what do you do when you get raised on this flop? You get check raised on this flop.
That's what I said. I would fold. I could fold if I check raises me. But I really think I need to follow through with a bet here.
All right, now you don't think that this line of a small blind calling a under-the-gun raise and then checking a flop that he's not going to check raise you like 96% of the time here?
No.
To get you to fold because he knows that you probably missed it and you're going to c-bet?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I made under-the-gun raise basically early position, so under-the-gun plus one, you know, or two. I made an early position raise. I am expected to bet, and I'm expected to have a big hand here. I could have easily had aces, kings, queens, jacks, and it's an overpair to all these cards. This guy could be set mining. He could have had king-queen defending. He could have ace-rag defending. You know, I don't know how this guy plays. Regardless of being a small blind or a big blind, people love to protect their blinds. And I don't know anything about this player from what we've been told, so I'm playing it pretty standardly. And I can't tell you how many times I've raised, gotten a blind to call me, bet out on a ragged flop, and gotten him to fold. I don't get check raised that often that I have to be afraid of it. Hmm. I have to bet 40,000 or so here and see what happens.
Hmm. Hmm.
I mean, I raised early position. What else could I possibly... Well, I'm going to check now and give up the lead
well,
in the hand?
Exactly. And I said I could just as easily bet out. I think it's... This is one of those situations where the small blind has a little bit more power than they normally do. Because, if you bet and then they raise you, then I think it puts some doubt in your mind. Now, obviously, if you have a real hand, and we don't have a real hand here,
right,
then that player's going to get crushed. But... And I don't know how many chips this guy has either. I mean, that would be nice to know. But maybe he's willing to check raise to see if he can get you to lay it down, and then if you re-raise him, then he can fold it. there's just not a lot of upside to calling in a small blind, I don't think, against a preflop aggressor there, unless you're going to try to push him off the hand in some way.
Well, you know, again,
I mean, you're just going to call to hope he hits a set with well, like I said, with no money in there.
If I'm in a small blind, and I have like king queen suited, I'm not folding to a raise unless it's. I'm just not. Right. I could have ace.
If you have king queen suited, I mean, this is not a good flop for you. So, I mean, you're just going to like give it up now?
Maybe. I mean, it depends. This guy showed. I mean, I have to hit my hand to play it. If this guy is in earlier position and showed strength and I check raise and then he check raises, I've just given up 120,000 chips because I'm going to raise him three times what he bet. If I bet 40,000 and then this guy in a small blind check raises me, he's going to have to check raise at least 140 grand. And if I have a bigger hand, he loses probably what's amounting to half his stack or so on a stupid move, a king queen. So yeah, I probably would give it up if I don't hit my king or queen, but I have to defend with that hand. I don't think I'm going to check raise with it.
But you're not. See, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. I love this now, because you're like, you know, you're under the gun, so it's not like you're stealing the blinds. That's what you said earlier, right?
Right.
So why do you need to defend against somebody that's obviously in a precarious position and making a raise? I totally see the defending the raise from the button to cut off, even the hijack. But under the gun, that's not the time I'm going to be all Custer here and take a stand.
Well, you're saying that the small blind wouldn't defend, and that, to me, is not
true. I'm not saying they wouldn't. I'm just saying it's not the best time to defend. That's
right,
all I'm trying to do is defend.
It's not. You're trying to play both sides, saying that you know the person has ace-queen, and so you have king-queen, and you wouldn't defend.
No, I'm not saying that
at all.
He
could have jacks. He could have nines.
He could have all kinds of stuff. What I'm saying is if I'm going to call that raise in that situation from the small blind, I intend to try to win this pot. If I don't try to tend to win this pot, I'm not going to just dump money off hoping that I hit a king or a queen. And particularly if I have king queen there, I don't want to. Do you really want to hit a king or a queen against somebody that raised under the gun?
Well, I'm just giving you an example. It could be all kinds of things.
Okay, I know, but that's the example you're talking about.
No, I'm saying I would defend with king queen. I would defend with 7-7. I would defend with eights. I would defend with any pair that's small. I would re-raise with anything that's like jacks or higher and see if he really does have a hand or if he has like ace king. You know, or ace queen. So I just think that king queen.
You're not defending the win the pot. You're defending the hope to hit the hand.
Well,
I think there's a difference there.
Well, I don't think there is. I think there's a difference what you're saying, but I don't think that people defend to win the pot. I think they defend against somebody raising to make sure they really have a hand and that they have money invested already. So if you're saying to me that you only defend because you want to steal that pot somehow, then you're going to lose a lot more than you win. You've got to be able to hit a hand.
I'm not
going to
make that call. So I'm a different kind of player.
Well, I mean, I don't think that I would fold.
But what I'm saying is it's different to be defending depending on where the person is stealing from. I don't think an under-the-gun raise most of the time is a steal. It's a real hand.
Well, I think ace-queen's a real hand suited, but it's not
right,
a main
so
hand.
Why would I want to defend against a hand that's quite a bit better than mine?
Well, I don't know if it's better than mine. Like, king-queen it is. But pocket
well, you
pair
know
is
what your hand is.
Well, you don't know what the hand is.
No,
people
but you know what your
position
hand
with,
is.
No, what I'm saying is I don't know what he has beats my king-queen. Or if I hit my king or my queen, it might be beating what he has after the flop. You have to know that. You have to know your player and see what kind of player he is. If I have king-queen and I think he could have jacks, I know if I hit a king or a queen, it's going to be good. And if I know an overcard comes, I can represent it against this player because he tends to fold to it. I mean, you don't know these players well enough to say whether you should defend or not in a small blind. You sound like you would fold every small blind no matter what then to a raise as long as it's not the button. And
no,
I couldn't
not,
do that.
I'm saying I'm going to take I'm going to be very careful in the small blind because I'm going to be the first one
sure.
to act.
Sure.
It's the worst position, and just because I have a little bit of money in doesn't give me license to waste more money. And so I guess what I'm saying is if I'm going to call, I mean, this is what? A raise to 30,000, small blind, I have 5,000 in. So I'm calling 25,000 here. I don't know what my stack is because we don't know.
Right.
But it's probably, I'm guessing, 10% maybe. I'm hoping at least.
Maybe.
I'm not going to call that and hope that I hit one of my two cards and win the hand. If I'm going to commit 25,000 or 10% of my stack or more than 10% of my stack, I'm going to do it with the intention of trying to win the hand regardless of what the flop is.
Right. Well, again, you know, even if
not, I mean, I'll just fold. At this point, I mean, the stakes are getting high. That you know, $5,000. I'd rather throw the $5,000 away and let the guy keep trying to hammer at my blinds. And one day, I'm going to have a good blind, and then I'll brutalize him. I'm not going to throw $25,000 away on a big, you know, cockfight here.
Yeah, but the other thing too is he could be trying to set mine, like we said. He could have a small pair, and he could check, knowing he has a set now, or that he missed. He could have, like, deuces, for Christ's sakes. Who knows? So
yeah, if I had deuces, I'd probably make this call, but then I would also take a shot here. I mean, again, it's tough to say because we don't know what our stack is.
Yeah, stack size. He could have a million chips, and 25,000 means nothing.
Right. But I'm going to – I think, generally speaking, and I guess this is totally generally speaking, you're right, you have to know the player, but – you know, a player under the gun makes a raise. He's going to generally on this board make a continuation bet. And more times than not, he's not going to have hit the flop. Now, if he has aces or kings or queens, we're screwed anyhow.
Right.
But I'm gonna put him to a test here because this is a board that a small blind hand could have hit. If his set mining, fours, fives, and tens are all legitimate hands that I could have, and I could represent those.
Absolutely. I mean, there's millions of ways to play this. But right now, we have to play it like Columbo, and right now, I'm going to c-bet because I have showed strength. I don't care what the small blind is. I don't care that it's Scott Long in the small blind who, if he's calling, is going to try to steal it from me. I have ace-queen, and ask Gambit. He'll tell you that ace-queen is a hand here on a ragged flop like this. It's still probably the best hand, and I'm not going to give up control of the hand. I have position, and I showed strength. There's no way I'm checking just on the hope that this guy doesn't check raise me. It's like so remote. How many times in a tournament do you get check raised?
But that's not what I'm saying here. What I think was really hilarious about this is that this is probably the longest 1 minute ride along with Clumbo we've had. And at the very beginning, I'm like, I could easily bet 40K either. it's funny the logic going on here. But I'm not checking here because I'm afraid I'm going to get check raised. I'm just kind of trying to do some pot control here. I didn't hit my hand.
Right.
If I check here, I get a free card to hit an ace or a queen.
Right.
And if something crappy comes, then, you know, he's going to bet less than raising me, and I could probably raise him then and still, maintain control of the hand. Or if he checks again, then I'll definitely bet on the turn. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's lots of opportunity here.
Absolutely, and there's a million ways to play this hand. There really is. I mean, you could check behind, but you're giving up that, you know, you're giving up the control of the hand, and then if you do hit your ace or your queen.
Giving up control of the hand, but I'm not worried about it. There's not a lot of cards coming that I'm worried to hit.
Yeah.
You know, so more of it's pot control because I'll probably put that 40K in on a bet on the turn on almost any card on the turn.
Right.
I mean, this guy, he can't be playing. He's not going to be calling this race from the small blind with deuce tray or 6-7. All right, so he's not on a straight draw. It's a rainbow flop, so there's no flush on the turn, if he's got anything, it's a set, and we're way behind a set. Or he's just got a single pair, and we've got two overcards. So I'm not worried about giving him a free card here. I'm just trying to control the pot so I don't get stuck into a situation where I wake up and go, wait a minute, I started this hand with 330,000, and now I'm down to 100,000. All because I was being Johnny Bravo.
All right, well, I hear you. And let's see what happens here.
Welcome back. Well, what do you think? Are you going to c-bet when you miss the board? Typically, you would. Here's my problem. I hate this board against his range. Would he float out of position with nothing this late? I don't think so. My guess is he had some sort of middling to marginal pair, and I think if I c-bet here, he's going to take advantage of me like something I can't describe. I know I would.
Sort of a defensive posture, really, sir.
Late as it is, and as weak of a move as this is, I'm literally going to check behind and give up the hand. I really think that he's got a small pair, and that I'm not going to push him off of it. We check it down, and he shows pair of threes, and I decide to live another day. So it's the same level still. It's costing us 25K a level. I have 300K around. And somebody shoves all in for 150K, and we have queen. Easy call? Not really going to stop here. I think this is so easy that we just call, and he shows a pair of fours, and we take another 100,000.
Sometimes the answer is the obvious one.
So as the big stack of the table, we fast forward to 8,000, 16,000, 2,000. When the under-the-gun player makes it 48K, and it folds around us on the button with ace of spades, queen of clubs. Jeez, not again. Still, strong holding on the button. Raise, call.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Hey, Chris, I love our forum, AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum. You know, we have our own little community there. It's a small community, but when people like each other for the most part, every once in a while we get out of line and things are a little fun. You know, we're never going to be 2 plus 2, right?
Right.
We're going to be like 0.2 plus 0.2. And I'm fine with that because, you know, it's just our nice little community, so people know what they get when they're in there. But, you know, every once in a while, there is a thread started on our forum that just goes gangbusters.
Yeah. It's got that little scrolling wheel on the left-hand side. Yes. You know it's on fire when that thing's rolling.
The little hamster's running out of gas, man. He's like, come on, dude. Can't we pick on Gundam again or something? And so this last week we had one of those situations come up. And it involved a hand. And as the discussion unfolded, someone said, hey, why don't you guys make that the hand of the week this week? And, you know, one of the people involved in it, Gambit, who is one of our forum moderators and probably our longest listener.
Yeah.
Said, I don't know if it would work as a hand of the week, but maybe it would work if, you know, Chris and Scott took two different sides and we didn't reveal the cards. And I said, you know what? That sounds interesting. It may not be a hand of the week, but sometimes we do situations of the week, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
the hand itself isn't really hand of the week worthy, but the situation is probably worthy of discussion. So
yeah.
We're like, all right, let's do it. So so Gambit and Raskiny, the other person on his hand, both sent us independently their whole cards, which were never revealed in the hand, and their thoughts on this. And we were going to go at it. But and then more we talked about it, the forum kept going crazy, and it turned into a bigger issue than that, I think. So this week, it's going to be our hand of the week and main topic all in one, because it's just too much to contain it into one, right?
It's a Christmas miracle.
It is.
We needed a topic, and one was landed in our lap, so.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. all right, well, as I mentioned, you can go to anniupmagazine.com/forum and just look for the most active topics button. It will be. Yeah. 1 through 10, probably. It's that active, and you can catch up on it. But we're going to get you what you need to know here in our discussion. So this all started, Chris, in a Zips tournament. You know that the little
spinoff.
You're right, right. Yeah, it's the Jeffersons of the All in the Family. it's, you know, it's hosted by Zorag, one of our forum moderators, who went off and created his own forum, Beef, Beer, and Poker. And part of that, he runs a Wednesday night tournament. It's just $1 to get in, and just a friendly little game for folks. And it's not exclusatory. See, no. I just created a word there.
There you go, exclusatory. That's a cool word.
It's not bad. I think it's going to be my band name, too.
Wow, you are the Sarah Palin of the Annie Up Nation.
Yeah, the exclusatory is going to open for you, too, and then you're going to be laughing. but, you know, anybody can enter it, and, you know, it was a fun little tournament. I mean, and to be honest, the competition isn't that great because I've won one of these, so
that
it must be.
Yeah.
but the game a week and a half ago was Omaha High-Low Pot Limit, or Omaha Pot Limit Omaha 8, I guess is probably the better way to say it. My game. I don't know where I was. I wasn't playing. But Gambit was playing, Raskiny was playing. And there were a couple people that entered the tournament, and I don't think they fully understood what it was. They just, you know, someone said, hey, it's under a tournament. They had a password and they got in, right?
Right.
Okay, so we're down to four-handed in this particular situation, and a top three in the tournament cash.
Right.
All right, so we're on the bubble. And And again, it's a dollar tournament, so I think the payouts were like 3, 2, and 1. All right, so no one is going out to buy a new iPad for the family if they win. But, you know, you're playing for points and pride and all kinds of other stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, and you're playing poker and you want to win anyway. So regardless of the amount of money, you're still going to give it your all.
All right, so in seat one was a player named Killy at 4,200 in chips.
Right.
Seat five was Raskiny with 1,672 in chips. Seat six was one of these players had just joined for the first time with 1,300 chips, so the short stack. And then Gambit is the fourth player with 7,827 in chips, so the big stack by almost...
Almost 2-1.
Almost 2-1 over second place, right?
Right, right.
All right, and we are at the 150-300 level. And the hole cards are out. So what we're going to do is we're just going to play through the hand without revealing any hole cards so we can set up the situation that caused the drama. And then we'll go back and play the hand through from Gambit's point of view and then go back and play it through from Raskiny's point of view. Make sense?
Yeah, I'm going to play the role of Gambit, so let me get into character here. Hang on. Okay, all right. Deep Blue, set the lighting mood for me, will you? Okay, and put those circuit boards down over there. Okay, all right. I got to get into them. All right. So now I'm chip leader, right? I'm Gambit. I won't do Gambit's voice, though, because we both come from Connecticut, so I probably have the same accent as him, so I don't have to really change my voice too much. But I'm Gambit. The blinds have been posted by Killy and Raskiny, right? So right. It folds
Raskiny
to me.
Raskiny or Raskiny?
I don't know. Raskiny, I guess. I don't know.
You know what? I really don't know.
I don't either.
I'm Raskiny. Raskiny sounds more fun, doesn't it?
All right, let's call him Raskiny.
Italian. We have too many Italians already in this hand.
All right, so Raskiny. They post the blinds. Raskiny's in the big blind. And it folds to me, the short stack folded, and I decide to call with my cards. How's that? Did I do okay?
You did.
All right, I called. I can't tell you what my cards are yet.
No, because that would be against our rules here.
Yeah, so.
All right, and the small blind called as well, too. And I, as Raskiny, to be honest, I don't think I've talked to Raskiny, so I can't make up a character. Maybe I'll make him, like, French.
Oh, no. There's no way you're going to attempt a French accent on this show.
Oh, no.
You sound just like Elky.
Elky. All right, I'll play Raskiny straight, because I'm probably already butchering his name, so I don't want to offend him or her any more than I already am. All right, and I wrap the virtual table.
Yes.
So three of us going to a flop of four of spades, tray of diamonds, five of diamonds, and the small blind checks. It's on me. I am the short stack. I am going to check.
And even though I'm the chip leader, I think this hand may have hit a lot of people. I don't know, so I'm gonna check too. I'm not gonna reveal what I have, but I feel like I need to check here, okay. So I'm gonna check.
Wow! So a free pass to the turn, which is the deuce of diamonds. So now our board is a four of spades, tray of diamonds, five of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. And small blind checks again, gets to me, and I'm like, whoa, that's a pretty scary board. I'm going to check as well.
Wow. All right, well, chip leader, in position, two checks to me. As Scott Long would say, if it checks to you twice, you better bet. So I'm going to bet 600 here, and hope to take it down.
All right. Well, hey, that was a good bet there, Gambit, because you got the small blind to fold, but
right.
whoa. Hold the Eiffel Tower. I'm looking at another look at my cards. You know what? I'm going to raise you all in.
Oh, my God. Well, all right, so how much is
that? My last 772 on top of that, so 1372. You got to call 772 to see the end of this hand. What do you do?
Oh, all right. Well, I'm going to fold. I'm just going to toss in my chips. It's going to cost me 772 to win... I don't know how much it is at this point. 2100.
2100.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to fold. Yeah. Almost 3-1. I'm going to fold, and regret it forever.
How can you fold that? Just 772 to win 2100. Of that board, you're the chip leader. What are you thinking?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I've done the calculations, and I've I've run all of the numbers through my my computer, and my AI has learned to teach me that I should fold in this pot. So it's told me to fold, and I'm folding here. I'm sorry. I just made a mistake, and now I regret it.
Hey, you don't have to apologize to me, man. You kept me in the tournament. I got 2,100. I'm going to run and win this thing now, man. Woo-hoo!
Right. We'll
and
see.
Scene.
Oh, man, it takes a lot out of me.
Man, yeah, that was pretty dramatic. I think we're going to win a Poker Podcast Emmy for that.
I think I'm going to have to be like Judd Nelson, though, and stay in character the rest of the way. I'm not going to give up. True story, you know, true story. Judd Nelson stayed in character so long on the Breakfast Club set that he pissed off John Hughes, and John Hughes vowed to never work with him again.
Wow.
Yep. He couldn't understand that he was still in character, and thought he was just a big ass. So he never worked with him again. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm gonna be a big ass, big stretch for me, I know. And I'm going to stay in gambit mode here for a little while.
All right. Well, you know what? We were having a little fun there at the end of this, at the end of the hand. But that was the impetus for this entire forum, is the fourth player still alive, who was not in the hand other than folding at the beginning, typed in the chat, "That was a weird bet." To gambit.
Right.
All right. And then it slowly disintegrated into what eventually became an accusation of chip dumping. And so that's where we get to where we are now. Was Gambit, with the massive chip stack, dumping to a fellow friend to keep him alive at the expense of a fourth player that none of them knew? Or was he justified in folding this hand for a bet of only 772?
Well, you know what? Without even knowing the cards, and just taking this for what it's worth, you know, on paper, it looks to be that Gambit was stealing, realized he got trapped, and said, regardless of what he holds and what I hold, I can't beat much here, and I could still be looking at just winning half this pot anyway. So I can't justify a call here. I was trying to just run with my hand and hope that they didn't have anything or were scared by what that board represented and let it go. So he folded. And I just by looking at it, it looks like he was trying to steal, got caught, put his hand in the cookie jar, and and folded. So to me, it doesn't look like a chip dump, because there's so many easier ways to chip dump than that, I would imagine. I mean, you'd have to wait two streets to do it, then bet an amount that looks fishy to have them, you know, to fold to after that. You know what I mean? So that doesn't make sense to me that you chip dumped there. It looks like you just got caught.
All right. Well, I still don't know what Gambit's card, so don't tell me yet here.
Right.
But
okay.
When this first started, I looked at it, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's, I could easily fold that. Now, of course, when it comes to folding... there's not a laundromat in the country that does it better than I do. So don't go by me. But, you know, I like to put my tournament on the line ever, and certainly he's not putting his tournament on the line here. But I think one of the things that I've noticed with this kind of chip stack is that lead is not comfortable.
Right, right.
You know, particularly in pot limit.
Yeah,
I mean, we're at a 150-300 level here. You know, if he made that call, lost it, he'd be down to 5,700. Raskiny would be up to, 20. Oh, boy. Be right into it. I mean, it'd almost be a three-way battle at that point.
Yeah, it would be.
To be honest.
You'd have two guys and with about 4,000, a little more or so, and then he'd have 5,000. So, really, you're just asking for trouble there. And I think that if you were trying to make a move and steal with, you know, a piddly hand or, you know, maybe a small two pair or something, you know, you have to get out. So I don't see that as a chip dump, to be honest. And it's not, this isn't homerism. So just because we know Gambit and playing his home game or whatever, it doesn't mean that we're defending him that way. We're defending him because it looks like he he's trying to steal, got caught, and said, instead of risking another 72 and get these guys all tied up with me, I'm going to keep my lead and just move on to the next hand.
Yeah, and I guess the other part of it, too, is with that chip stack, I'm not eager to lose a lot of chips on... a hero call.
Right.
But I am willing to, when it's no one is showing any interest at all in this hand, to throw a bet in on an extremely scary board, particularly into a couple short stacks that don't want to, or well, one short stack that doesn't want to lose. You're going to get a lot of folds
right.
normally that
right.
way.
Yep. So
you're right. If you get played back at, then you know, hey, you got your hand caught in the cookie jar. if you keep it in score at home, that's twice that we've used that cliche in the last 3 minutes. But I certainly feel justified in making that bet because, you know, more often than not, people are going to fold there and wait for a better spot.
Right. And you've got, again, you're shorthanded, so people are still going to be in desperate mode there. The short stacks are going to be desperate. The blinds are pretty big, you know. I mean, four big blinds for one of the short stacks, you know. I mean, and Raskinny at the start of the hand had five. So, I mean, I don't think that there's any reason to risk another 772 here if you don't have anything that's worth risking it with. So I think we should probably reveal Gambit's cards.
Yes. So, but first, let's go to commercial break. All right. Now, well, what did our friend Gambit here?
Okay.
Here?
Well, he started with the two of clubs.
Two of clubs.
The jack of diamonds. The queen of spades.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of spades.
Ooh, the three of spades.
So, a good holding four-handed. Two babies, you know, two spades, two broadways. Not exactly the nut cards that you're looking for, but, you know, an ace flops.
Four-handed, it's a good.
Four-handed, it's pretty good.
I do it.
Yeah, you got a high and a low in there.
All right, now he was on the button, right?
Right.
All right. Yeah, he's the total chip dump here. What a waste. Can't believe I let this guy into my house. My wife's in the next room and everything. Oh, man. Nasty.
Yep.
I'm not even looking at the chip dump point yet, but I'm kind of surprised he didn't raise preflop with this.
Hmm. I think he feels the same way. He said it may have been a better option. And folding, he said, was just out of the question. It's just too tight in his opinion. And he plays pretty tight normally.
Definitely can't fold. I mean, here's the thing. You got the chip lead. You've got a two-way hand.
Right.
I mean, again, it's not a great hand, but we're playing four-handed, so it becomes a much better hand.
Right.
Really, I think, you know, unless the big blind, which was Raskinny here, wakes up with something, I think you're probably more likely than not get a fold out of it. But probably just even a basic min raise here. And if you get called, great. You know, you still got a hand that plays well both ways.
Yeah,
three handed.
Yeah, I have no problem with raising. I mean, I guess he could. Oh, I guess you would probably bet pot here too because you said min raise, but I don't know. Maybe I'd bet pot here just to really put the pressure on them, especially with Raskinny being one of the
short stacks. Yeah, I can see that too. I mean, I guess I just didn't. Let's see. If you bet pot, it would be what at that point?
You'd call 300.
700 or
and
so?
And it'd be 750. So you'd bet 1,050, I think, at that point.
All right. So essentially, you'd be putting Raskinny almost all in with that bet.
Yeah.
You know, and I would be fine with that, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. I
wouldn't
want
to get raised by the small blind, that second in chips, but.
Yeah. Nah, maybe a call's good. I mean, maybe a call is good, just because you're risking, you're basically putting this, are you really, because if he's going to call, he's going to shove. So are you really really willing to risk 1,600? Because I think at that point, if you're betting 1,000, you can't fold 1,600 preflop.
But here's the thing you got to understand, I think. We are four-handed here. We are on the bubble.
Right.
All right. The big stack has a wolf in a chicken coop. Ability here until that third person or fourth person gets eliminated to put pressure on him here. So at this point, you know, Raskinny's going to have a really good hand, I think, to call if he puts it all in because he doesn't want to be the fourth one out, particularly if there's a short stack that's going to be in the blind on next hand. I would be more inclined if I was Raskinny to fold unless I had a hand that I really liked at that point. I mean, I would much rather be the one pushing the action than not. And with 1672 in chips, I mean, it's still five big blinds.
Right.
Of course, that was before the
Blinds. So he'll have 1,300 at this
four
point.
Big blinds if he folds and would be, yeah. and the other thing, too, is if I'm the second stack, which is Calico. The last person I want to get involved in within a hand four-handed is the chip leader.
Right.
Because I've got two people that could go out before me and then lock up my profit and then go to battle with the chip leader.
Right.
So I would almost advocate raising with a lot of hands here, but particularly this hand. I mean, a two-way hand, I'm betting pot here. I'm taking my shot.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I was thinking pot, but I'm wondering, you know, and that's true. As long as Raskiny is thinking like that, that he's thinking, okay, I need to get out of the way here because the next hand, the small stack is going to be in the big blind and be down to like 900, and I could literally just, you know, back into the money here. So as long as that's the way he's thinking, he hasn't picked up ace-ace double suited. Yeah, you know, I agree. Probably pot would get him out. Of course, we're going to find out in a minute what kind of hand he has and whether or not it would have worked. This is what, you know, Gambit said. He says, calling three-handed on the button is okay with 3-2 working for the low and queen-jack with the queen suited as for high. And raising may have been the better option, but folding was way too tight. So that's why he called the hand rather than raise, and that's why he was in the hand in the first place.
All right. All right, so the flop comes four of spades, three of diamonds, five of diamonds. So he picks up a straight draw.
Right, he's got sort of a wrap.
Foot counter fitted, but it could work there. Backdoor flush draw. So, I don't know. So two checks to him. Oh, boy, I might have to bet here again.
Yeah, I mean, if they checked to me, yeah, I probably would probably bet, and they did. They checked. I think I probably would have bet at that point maybe 400, 450 or something, like half the pot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the fear of betting there maybe, I mean, or hoping that the big stack is going to put a bet in and check raise, then you got to consider where you want to continue with this hand. But, you know, even then with a two, I got a pair of threes, two, I got all kinds of straight draws, you know, I might call. So, yeah, I think I got a bet here.
Well, Gambit says that it's a very coordinated low board, and he only made bottom pair with a straight draw and a low draw. It gets checked to him. He checks behind because he doesn't really have anything in either direction except draws. So I can see his reasoning that...
Yeah, but Omaha, you bet your draws, particularly when you have a big stack.
Right. No, I'm just saying I can see his reasoning because someone, like you said, could be slow playing something here. And all you really have is three and draws, and if a blank comes on a turn, then they shove, you know, you've wasted 450 or whatever, or they could check raise you. So I could see his trepidation here. But yeah, no, I know you bet your draws, but it's not the greatest draws either. He's got a backdoor flush draw. That's not really a draw. And he's got a counterfeited card to his low that if, yeah, he needs the ace to come, really. You know what I mean? It's, I don't know. I mean, I see that you bet your draws, but it's not the greatest draw in the world.
Yeah, but it's checked around to me. I could totally defend a check here, so I'm not. I think the bigger mistake was not raising preflop.
Yeah.
But here I could go either way. But I'm not afraid to bet here.
Especially
get a piece of this.
Especially if you raised preflop, they would maybe give him credit for ace deuce, and then the flop comes 2-3-4 or 3-4-5. I mean, so he's got the wheel at that point if he's represented it. So yeah, the raise preflop and then the bet out here would have taken us down.
All right, well, he checks around, so we get the free look at the turn card, which is a deuce of diamonds. So the board now is the four of spades, three of diamonds, five of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. So he's really drawing to an ace for the low now, right?
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
But he's got two pair now, so he's got a backdoor boat draw, not a great one.
No.
Obviously, flush is there, straights are there, all kinds of stuff are there. And it's checked around to him again, so...
Yeah,
this point, he's crazy not to bet, I think.
Well, the other thing, though, that, and I'm not saying he did or didn't bet yet. I'm just saying that the other thing is that three diamonds are on the board now, too.
Right.
So, really, we're drawing to the worst possible and the second worst possible boats. Yeah. So, anybody with, like, pocket fours or pocket fives has us crushed. And the diamond flushes already could be there. So, yeah. To bet here now... I don't know. It seems like if they weren't trapping me on the flop, they could easily have something now. Don't even have to trap me now. I mean, on the turn. I don't know. I don't know about betting here. Maybe, I guess. Yeah, I know I got two pair, but I'm not making a low unless the ace comes. You know, that's going to really help me. A six, I guess I get a low, but almost for sure someone has an ace in their hand. I don't know.
I don't know for sure on that. But,
yeah, I guess so, because four-handed. But still.
I mean, the other thing that's really rough about this is when you're learning to play Omaha 8, I mean, you get brutalized early on playing it because you play every hand. You're like, ooh, I got four cards, and it's high and low. I got...
Yeah.
So you learn to tighten up as you become a player. But then when it gets down to short-handed, you don't get to throw a lot of that out, I think.
Yeah, no, I do. I agree. I mean, obviously your hand values go up, and but it's just a baby two pair drawing to the worst boat, drawing to almost a miracle low. Just
but I'm not worried so much about what I have at this point. I mean, I would bet here with anything again. I mean, you've got checked around on a flop. Checked again on the turn. I mean, really, are these players just going to wait for someone to bet their hand for them?
Yeah.
And if you're not going to bet the turn, I mean, I know there's some third and fourth level thinking here. Hey, I'll check again. Maybe somebody will take a stab, and then I'll pounce. But, yeah, it's a chip leader again. And, all right, so he bets 600, which, I mean, you could probably bet a little less. But 600 is a good bet. You know, you're betting 600 out of your...
What? At that point, it's
7,500?
Yeah, 75.
That's a reasonable shot at winning this hand, I think. And if you get called, then you've got outs. You could just check it down on the river.
Well, let me ask you this. I've been hearing this a lot lately. Are you betting on this turn willing to make a call if you get raised? Because if you're not, then maybe you shouldn't bet, too. That's what I've been hearing.
No, so, that's an excellent point.
So that's what I'm saying. If he knew that Raskin, he could possibly be slow playing or sneaky here, and just trying to get as many chips as possible to survive the bubble, and then he check raises me, I have to think, am I going to bet and then fold here? No, I really probably wouldn't be betting and folding. So to bet now and then fold, you know?
I could see. I mean, I'm betting less than 10% of my stack at the shot to win, you know, whatever it is at this point, 900
pot, yeah.
Yep. And if I get raised, well, hey, I made a shot. Of course, it would depend on the raise, too.
Right.
Which is what we're probably going to get to here in a minute. But I'm not that I'm happy just throwing away chips, but to me, I think it's a good return on investment here to make a bet on a board that's been checked around the flop, checked around on the turn. It's very scary looking. I'm the chip leader. No one really wants to get entangled with me. I'm going to take a shot here. And I guess at the time, I'm thinking... I will bet, and if I get called, that I've outs. I'm not really thinking about the raise too much. But if I get raised, I'm going to be able to sleep well at night knowing I can fold that 600 and still have close to 7,000 left.
Right.
It'd still be the chip leader, I think. Because even if the small blind wins the hand, it's less than what you have.
Yeah, yeah, no.
With two short stacks then.
Well, the turn then for Gambit obviously puts four to a wheel and the diamond flush on the board. He says he makes bottom two pair, deuces and trays, and it gets checked him again. So no one has shown any strength, like we've said. So he decides, I could probably buy this pot by betting at it, you know, given that scare card and that he actually has two pair, too. If he's called, he probably will have to hope to improve on the river. So he does bet. The small blind gets out of the way, so already he knows he's going to have a chip lead at the end of his hand no matter what. And but then he says he is surprised when you rascally Raskiny.
I am so rascally.
You check raise from the big blind all in, 1372.
Yeah, what do you think about that, biatch? 772 coming right back at you, Gambit.
Yeah, so clearly it was they set the traps. You know, they put the cheese on the on the little metal circle, hoping for the thing to come around and snap our neck off, which indeed happens. We have two pair, but really only miracle draw for a low, really. And, you know, now Gambit decides this is a pretty strong check raise because it puts him all in for his tournament life on the bubble. No fold equity versus the big stack because no way, you know, when you look at it that way, you'd think the big stack would probably call instantly anyway.
Right.
You know, considering they're on the bubble and there's another short stack at the table. So he has to figure that he would not make this play without half the pot locked up or at least a medium strength hand both ways. And against this board, he's still really drawing in both directions. He has no low and he thinks he probably has to improve to a boat, which may not even be good anyway.
That's true. That's true.
So we tank. And he eventually fold, despite getting better than 3.5 to 1 on a call. He says there was 2872 in the pot. 772 to call would be 3.72 to 1. So you know he's got some other stuff here. I guess I could read it if you want. He says going back after the fact and trying to figure if I made the right decision, I came up with a range of hands I could put Raskinny on. 3.72 to 1 on my call means that I need 21.2% equity or better to make calling a correct play. He said he's going to post the details on the forum after this. So, but there are so many possible made lows that also make a straight, and he's crushed against that portion of his range. Against flush hands, it depends on if he also has made a low or not, but it's a close call, and I figured it would be. Using the weighted range that I came up with, I had about 18% equity, and folding was a correct play. He's going to go back and post his actual equity against the true hand once he finds out what it was on the show today. He says he thinks he was able to prove to himself that this is not a slam dunk must call if you put your opponent on as strong as a hand as he did. So, obviously everybody's a Monday morning quarterback with hindsight is 20/20 vision, any other cliches you can throw in there. It was probably more of
good for the goose is good for the gander.
It was more of a feel bet or a feel fold, I should say there. I think that he just knew.
Two in the hand is worth a burden of hand.
Yeah,
I messed that one up.
Yeah, you messed that one up real bad. But really, don't you think that when that check raise came, he's like, oh, man, I'm busted. There's no way my trays and deuces are good here, and I need a miracle to split it.
I think to me the most important thing he said was Raskinny's putting his life on the line here.
Yeah.
Now, a ballsy player might do that, knowing that a better player would realize that and say, oof, man, I'm crushed. But at that point, you're taking a shot that
he doesn't have a hand.
Doesn't have a hand.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think you're asking for quite a bit there at that point. Now, of course, you know, there's another chorus of players out there listening right now are going, hey, you got to play for the win. So you got to get chips anyhow. All right, well, that's cool. But, you know, I really do – I would have to put as much credence in the fact that he's got a real hand here as Gambit did. And if he's got a real hand, there absolutely is no reason why you would make this call before letting your time expire, because you got to think about it. And this is what gets really confusing with Omaha 8, particularly with this kind of board, or you got four low cards out there.
Yeah.
And you've got a couple in your hand, and it gets really confusing. You're figuring out what your hand really is, and I'm not at all suggesting that Gambit didn't know what his hand was, but, you know, you want to take a minute, just make sure you didn't misread your hand or you know what you're trying to get at for the next card. And I think he's right here. I mean, if he's got really, you're drawing to an ace for a low for the most part, and that's for half the pot probably,
right?
And then as you mentioned, you're probably drawing, you know, if we put him on a straight, then, you know, you're drawing to one of your boat cards,
right?
At that point, I'm just like, you know what, I don't think I can. I don't think I can really win this hand, or I'm not going to put this extra money in to try to win half of this hand.
Right.
And particularly by betting another 772 now, then I compromise my shot at winning this tournament.
And that also comes into play here when you think about the pot odds. He's saying 772 to win 2872, but really, if you know you're only going to get half this pot,
yeah,
it's not that. It's 772 to win 1400. You're getting 2-1 on your money. You know what I mean? And you could be quartered on top of it. You know, so you're going to 8-1.
It's 1-1.
Yeah, it's 1-1. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the fold because it just screamed to me that I was crushed by the check raise there. What could he possibly have to do that with? There's just, I know you said there could be somebody who's got balls there and doing that, but there's no way that you're going to think this guy's going to fold here when you make that bet. And so the reason why you're making that bet is because you've got something locked up, maybe even both halves. So there's no way that, I don't think there's any way Raskinny's bluffing here, and I really don't fault Gambit for folding. I don't think I would have faulted him for calling either. So it's one of those tweeners, and mathematically, once you split that pot in half and think you have to risk all that money to hope to win half, it's a good fold.
Half.
Yeah, it's a good fold.
Wow. So it kind of makes me rethink my betting on the turn, though.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's what I was saying before.
But nothing really changes on that. I still saw, you know, checked around the flop, checked around the turn, take a stab. But, I mean, really, if you don't bet there, then does Raskinny, what was Raskinny bet on the river? Is he going to push it all in? Probably not. It's going to push less, and you could call.
Yeah.
But I still think you got to bet on the turn. So, you know, from where I stand, the only thing that I would have done differently, Gambit, was raise preflop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my guess is, before I reveal Raskiny's hands, that probably wouldn't have gotten Raskiny out. We probably would have got it all in, and we would have seen the end of this hand.
And I probably would have bet less than a turn. I probably wouldn't have bet so much. I mean, I realize two-thirds of the pot is a good size, but really, if you're stealing it and hoping to just take it down, any bet will take it down if they have nothing.
Yeah, so like a min bet of 300 maybe.
Right, min bet of maybe 350 or 400. But yeah, exactly, because if they don't have anything, they're going to fold anyway. So why risk so much?
Right.
In a steal attempt, I mean.
All right, well, Raskiny sent me his cards.
All right.
And so here's what he had, if you're ready.
Yep.
Do you have a drum roll queued up in the studio?
No. I can bang on the desk here.
Like we were yesterday waiting for Skype to come back on?
Exactly.
All right, so he started with the five of hearts, the six of diamonds, the nine of hearts, and the ace of spades.
Oh, man.
All right, so, and I'll read through the notes that he gave him here. So he said the quick background, he'd been blinded down, gotten bad hands, he's being in it, and so he's very desperate now, squiggly five big blinds.
Right.
And he enjoyed getting the free walk in the big blind, even though four-handed, it's not a bad hand.
Right.
And I totally agree with him here. There's no reason to put more chips in this pot when you're the big blind and the short stack. Let's wait and see what that flop looks like. And if it's coordinated, then you can continue. If not, then boom. You only wasted what you were legally mandated to lose on this hand.
Absolutely. I totally agree with just a check there. I mean, yeah, you say it's a pretty good hand. You got two wheel cards in your hand. But really, you have one draw to a flush. You know what I mean? And it's not a high one. And
not a great one.
Yeah. You're not really going both ways here unless you get a really coordinated flop. So I agree. Yeah. I agree with a check there.
All right, good. He thinks that his table image is he's playing fairly straightforward, not getting out of line. He didn't think a pot bet would get anyone out enough of the time. I might actually end up with both of them long for a ride, which he didn't really want.
Yeah, no. He doesn't want that other stack to just distance himself even further from him and then make him go down into the actual short stack range. So I agree. I'm totally happy with checking there.
Yep. All right, so he said the flop looked good, but when it checked around, fortunately brought a deuce. And at this point, he said he figured he was chopping the pot, getting the low often enough that he decided to take a stand right here with his hand. And that's where it led into where he thought about betting out the pot here, but decided to check and see whether somebody made a bet.
Right. Well, at this point, it would have to just be Gambit since the small blind already acted to him. So he's just hoping that Gambit makes a bet and tries to steal it. And it's funny because he's got the nut low and he's got the second nut straight at this point, right? I mean, now he's on a flush, but
he doesn't have the nut low because he doesn't have a deuce. Well, I guess he does.
He doesn't have to. He has ace five, so he has a wheel.
Yeah, so he's not losing any money on this hand.
Right. He's out of wheel as far as low.
He's not getting eliminated, I should say. I shouldn't not losing him.
Right. Right. But I think he was wondering about being. Did he say about being chopping it, or he said we might have the same hand or something? I can't see anybody having a wheel here besides him, really, three-handed or four.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you've got an ace in any of the wheel cards, you've got the same wheel. You've got the same low. So
feel like if somebody had ace deuce or ace three, they would have raised.
True. Very true. Very.
So
true.
That's what I'm saying. If somebody has ace deuce, ace tray, or ace four, they might be raising pre-flop. No one raised, and no one showed any interest on the flop. If you have ace deuce and you flop 2-3-4-5 or 3-4-5, I mean, you have flopped the wheel. I think you're going to put a bet in at this point because you don't want to lose it to the flush draw. So I really think that he had. I don't know why he thinks that he's splitting this low or high. You know what I mean? I could never put anybody on a wheel at this point with all this checking and that flop, those two diamonds like that. So I think he knows he's got the nuts and he's got the second high straight. You know, so. I know this flush.
To be honest, this is a hand I would love to have in the big blind. Obviously, you would love to have the ace diamonds and four of diamonds and have the steel wheel here right now.
Yeah, I would have bet.
And maybe the six of diamonds, too, for extra effect. This is what I like about Omaha 8. And then when I play horse, I try to get to the split pot games because you got a better shot of staying alive when you're short stack there.
Yeah.
Because you can go both ways, and then you get into a situation like this where he knows he can't be eliminated.
Right.
He's got the nut low, and nothing's going to change the nut low.
Right.
You know, it's guaranteed. So he's not going to get eliminated. Plus, on top of that, he has a slightly better high than the net low.
Yep.
Even though it's not obviously the nuts because there's diamonds out there. So at this point, it's a matter of how to get the most chips, I think. And that's what he's thinking now is, you know, I could bet out. I'll just get called. I don't think I'm going to get raised. But if I check, hopefully somebody takes a shot at it, and then I can raise them. And then he says at that point, he knows it's a very, very small chance, but someone might fold if he bets, raises him.
Yep.
Which we've seen actually worked out. And, you know, I guess at that point, too, if, you know, I'm willing to probably let it check around the turn and then, you know, take my stand on the river. You know, I could probably just, at that point, the pot would be what, it's kind of confusing, 900. So take 900 on the ends. Even if I had to bet pot, you know?
Yeah.
Try to scare people into calling.
I think it's a very smart check on the turn. I think that anyone, see, I don't want to say what Gambit plays like, but I'm sure that anybody who's the big stack in a shorthanded situation like that will probably try to steal if it checks around to them twice. And because you said he can't get eliminated, I think that he doesn't have to worry about being outdrawn here. Yeah, maybe he'll lose half the pot, but he might, the risk might be, you know, he might get a better reward for it if he does check and then look weak again. And it turns out it was. He got Gambit to bet two-thirds of the pot. Then he's thinking, bingo, now he can't fold to my raise, and I've got the nut low, so I can't go anywhere. And I have a better, you know, in case somebody has the same wheel as me, they're going to get quartered, and I'm going to win three-quarters of this pot. So I like the check on the turn, because if he does bet there, I think Gambit folds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So that's a real smart check.
Well, particularly since he folded the raise, I mean, there's no way Gambit's going to put more money into this when somebody, a short stack bets out, based off the line of thinking that he had on why he didn't call the raise.
Right, exactly. So I think it's a real smart check. He got more money and you know, and survived. I'm sure he was shocked though when Gambit folded.
All right. So he says his afterthoughts here. He thinks he gets quartered here often. Ace deuce, ace trace, four ace five. All tie with me for the low, which we already mentioned. He probably got lucky that neither player had one of these hands. But it's shorthanded, so maybe it's less likely than I'm thinking, which I think is your point.
Yeah.
And if it's shorthanded, somebody's going to be raising with those hands.
Right.
He's worried about the flush beating a straight, but again, it was shorthanded. Then he says he's the first to admit that he doesn't properly know the odds of this happening in pot limit Omaha 8. You know, you got to remember that, too, in a dollar tournament.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where we got to the end. And I guess we need to call Lewis Black in to be a judge here, but
either that or Jerry Seinfeld.
I'm not comfortable calling this a chimp dump.
No, I'm not either because you know what else too? I mean, once you know, here's the thing: is if he's chip dumping to him, you almost have to think like these guys, if they were chip dumping, are on like Skype with each other or AIM, you know, Instant Messenger or something. Saying, what do you have? Okay, I got a wheel and a straight to the six. The only way you're going to beat me for the high is if you make a boat, so why not call my all-in and give me an extra 700 here, you know, until we get rid of the person that we don't want here. So, really, I mean, there's just no way. It's a chip dump. There's just no way, you know. I mean, I think Gambit regrets betting 600 there. I think he maybe probably wanted to bet 450 or something, or should have bet that to not risk that many more chips. But in the end, it really didn't matter. He still had 7,000 when it was over. You know, roughly, and I agree with you. I don't think it's a chip dump. I mean, first of all, in taking everything else out of consideration, I know Gambit as a person, and so
right,
you,
right,
and
right.
He'd be the last person in the world who would ever do something like that. Basically, because he loves money and doesn't want to lose any. So, but really, I mean, to call his character out like that in a dollar tournament, you know, and somebody doesn't even know him. To say stuff like that to him, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And I agree with you. The stats back up that he probably should have folded, especially when we talked about hoping to win half. You know, the numbers didn't add up.
All right. Well, let's twist this a little bit because I think what we got most people fired up was this accusation of chip dump.
Right.
And as I mentioned, it started out with just somebody mentioning, "Hey, that was a weird bet," which we see all the time online. I think.
Yeah.
And then it escalated up to the chip dumping. But I guess when I first saw this, I kind of chuckled. Again, mostly we're cloud because we know Gambit and chip dumping. Come on, really?
Yeah.
But I guess the other issue that came in is this outsiders versus regulars. Now, obviously, on our show, we're battling this with the interlopers and the free rolls, right?
Right.
And I have, I'm sure that no rather regular anti-uppers want interlopers to win any of our free rolls, or if they actually make it into the actual Apes tournaments to win. I have a tough time believing, though, that any of them would take that hatred to the point of chip dumping.
Right.
To get somebody out. Now, it's certainly within the realm of possibilities, but I have trouble believing that. But I guess what I was taken aback more is the fact that the person that was saying this was a weird bet was thinking that because it's in a forum-sponsored tournament and a password-producted, that she was surprised that there were friends there.
I know. I mean, what? It's password-protected. Who would come up with the password except people who don't want other people in there? What are you doing in their tournament anyway, to be honest?
Yeah. And I don't want to get too off on that tangent, but I guess what would more surprise me is that, you know, when we're in our home game, we're friends, right? But
yeah.
We want to walk away with the fattest wallet at the end of the day.
Right, absolutely.
And certainly in Apes, I think, I mean, we're playing for points for Player of the Year. You're trying to win this crappy plastic banana from Walmart, you know, get in a tournament. So I really don't think – I think people are out to win for themselves in our events.
Right.
As it should be.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. You know, and what does he accomplish by dumping the Raskini? Just to knock this one person out, but he puts his own tournament on the line by giving a quality player some more chips and him fewer chips. It just makes no sense in this situation. You know, I mean, they could easily just keep folding, you know, to each other when they're in the blinds and everything if they wanted to do something like that and only play when the short stack interloper was there in the hand. So I just, you know, he could have easily just folded, you know, and giving them back their money. You know, I just don't see it as a chip dump at all.
Well, yeah, and also the stakes involved too. I mean, this came up too, that, you know, hey, if you're a cheater at the $1 level, then you're a cheater at the $100 level. So at what point do you call somebody out on it? Which is probably right. But, you know, I just don't see the advantage of doing these complicated games to carve up a $6 tournament pot.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the higher the stakes, I think, then people are more tempted, and then you can get into some stuff like that where you're actually life-changing money. But I really hope that, you know, chopping up a $6 pot, hey, we all take $2 or, you know, $3. Yeah, $2 is what it would be if three of them
chopped it up,
for a dollar tournament that you pay to get in. So, I mean, a 90-cent, locking up that 90-cent profit, woohoo!
Exactly. I mean, think about it. You know, how convoluted the path would be to get to this point, to be able to chip dump on the bubble with someone who's not invited. We had a set of passwords so you wouldn't be invited, but then somehow you cracked the password to get into our private tournament, got the four-handed. You were in this situation where we got to a point where I would have to raise and try to steal it on the turn, hoping this guy would check raise me, and then I can just fold to him and pay a dime in rake to do all this. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It just doesn't add up.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, you know, I think it was an interesting hand, though, and I think it shows how people play and how they think, and, you know, you're not going to learn a lot from this hand, but as far as the gameplay itself, but, you know, you can see both sides of these hands and why it played out the way it did, and it added up. You know, I mean, I think I would have played it a little more aggressively in the beginning for Gambit and less aggressively later, and Raskini, I probably would have played exactly like Raskini did, although I probably wouldn't have been as smart as him to check on the turn. I probably would have put something out there just because I don't want, you know, I figured
I'd find out
if somebody's got diamonds or whatever. But, you know,
right. Even
so, it was a really, it was, to me, it was a brilliant check knowing that Gambit might try to steal it, and it worked out for him. And ultimately, Gambit wins this tournament, I think, I heard.
I believe so, yeah. I mean, it kind of got lost in all the shuffle here that went on. But, you know, I certainly encourage people to go to antiupmagazine.com/forum and read the thread. Despite all the craziness in it, there were some gems of knowledge. And, you know, I think one of them that's probably good to close the show with is, you know, when you're online, you really don't know what's going through somebody's head at a house. Four states, seven states, eight countries away.
Right.
And so you see something that looks weird, and I don't think anybody is accusing the accuser in this hand of not having a right to say, hey, that looks weird. But the problem is they're immediately jumping from weird to cheating. When, you know, we're at home, you know, maybe it's my favorite part of A Few Good Men, I'm not paying attention and I fold. Or I don't want to take the time to think about it, or the dog's barking, or the kid's crying, or, you know, I decide I need to get a new beer. You know, there's all kinds of weird things that go on in somebody's house that you can't, because you can't see them.
Right.
So it's easy, I think, to look at something and go, well, that's crazy. How could that happen? It must be cheating. And personally, I think we just need to kind of relax a little bit on that kind of stuff. You know, if you see a pattern of it, then that's different. But
yep, absolutely.
Since here or there... It could just be someone being stupid.
Well, Scott, you put it so eloquently, I'm getting all misty. But I got to tell you, though, I'm a little blue because it's the end of the show.
Very nice.
And I want to wish everyone in the Antiup Nation a happy holidays. And hope you enjoy your gift giving and your meal eating and your getting drunk and your poker playing. So... from all of us, Annie, up to all of you, happy holidays. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
That's gross.
Can't do it like you. You
get
that natural.
I got a big friggin' nose. When I start sucking air, I can't stop it.
Too small either, man. You and I had kids, man. It would be Pinocchio. That would be out of business.
Glad I'm recording this. Oh, my God. Okay, you start.